Last week, we celebrated the coming of the Spirit, who arrived in an unexpected and miraculous way at Pentecost. Among God's people today, there are many different ways of understanding the Spirit's presence in our own time. For example, many dedicated Christians think and talk about the Spirit's work as a kind of supernatural experience. I don't mean supernatural in the sense of speaking in tongues or being slain in the Spirit. Rather, I mean that the Spirit communicates and intervenes in ways that cannot be explained by ordinary human efforts. These Christians believe that the Spirit so infuses them that God himself spurs them on to be his mouth, his hands, and his feet, often surprising and delighting us. At the utmost extreme of this view are people who insist that God enables them to do his work and blesses them, even when the people themselves have not done anything to prepare for this work. Let me illustrate with an example. I know a very devout and joyful Christian, and I'll call her Kelly. She went to work overseas with a mission organization. Kelly went to teach English and to share God's love with her students. She believed that God had put that intense desire in her heart. However, Kelly did not have any training whatsoever for teaching, and particularly teaching English. In fact, she had never gone to university or college at all. She explained, though, that she was making herself available right now to God, and therefore God would give her all she needed for her work. For her, training was unnecessary, even though she came from North America, where there are numerous training opportunities. In fact, I think that for her, preparation seemed like a lack of trust in God. His Spirit was all she needed. And indeed, her work prospered. God did bless her and the people she served. Well, on the other end of the spectrum from Kelly, there are those who would consider her to be irresponsible and maybe even lazy. These kinds of Christians, who are equally dedicated, insist that God works primarily in the humanness of life, our daily concerns, our skills, and our human structures. These down-to-earth folks say that God wants us to take responsibility for ourselves and focus on the practicalities of life, rather than waiting around for a vision or dream from the Spirit that might never come. It's good to have dreams, they might say, but they come of hard work on our part, and they're based on practical steps. An illustration of this position would be someone who looks at the range of jobs available, selects the one they think will be most useful in God's world given their own particular aptitudes and interests, and then goes through all of the years of preparation to become qualified. Well, I know people in this camp too, and you probably do as well. And I've seen their lives blossom, full of God's grace and love in so many ways. So we have two opposite poles here. God works through supernatural means, or he works through our human skills and our hard work. Does either of these positions resonate with you? Or do you maybe find yourself somewhere in between the two poles? Here at The Res, we are rebuilding from the ground up how we make disciples of our children, our families, our youth, our neighbors, and even ourselves. Any renovation presents challenges. We've made it through our first challenge. Our grants have come through to hire new staff to support all of our rebuilding, both here at The Res and at St. Columbus. Our next challenge is, what are we going to do with the money that comes in? In other words, what is our vision for rebuilding, and how will we make the practicalities of that work actually happen? And most importantly of all, where is God in all of this? These questions show why we are studying the book of Nehemiah right now. He faced exactly the same kinds of questions that we do. So let's look at his story today in Nehemiah chapter 2. Right in verse 1, we find that Nehemiah is cupbearer to the king. This position was a very important one. Not only did the cupbearer select and serve the wine to the king himself, giving him direct access to the reigning monarch, and with it, if he played his cards right, considerable influence, but the cupbearer also tasted the wine, just on the off chance that there might be something poisonous in there. So the king and his cupbearer were on very intimate terms. Somehow Nehemiah, a Jewish exile in Persia, had attained this high position. No small feat. And so Nehemiah was perfectly positioned for his task of approaching the king. So far, God's work in Nehemiah's story is happening like our practical friends would assert, through the stuff of Nehemiah's everyday life. This continues as well into verse 2, when perceptive King Artaxerxes notices Nehemiah's long face. He inquires why his cupbearer is sad, and that gives Nehemiah the opening he needs. He tells the king the sorry state of things in Jerusalem, but Nehemiah is brilliant in replying to the king. He significantly does not mention the name of the city itself, because Nehemiah has done his research and knows his history. Some years before, the people of Jerusalem had begun rebuilding the city and had been accused of rebelling against the king. Artaxerxes had commanded that the work stop right away until such time as he gave his go-ahead to continue. That is where things stand when Nehemiah comes into our story today and talks to the king. He wisely avoids mentioning the name of the city of Jerusalem in making his appeal to the king. Now, Artaxerxes would no doubt know which city he was talking about, but he would be very likely to notice and appreciate Nehemiah's tactfulness in his request. In any case, the king is sympathetic and asks Nehemiah quite bluntly what he wants. So far, score another point for the practical types among us. God is working through Nehemiah's normal life and work. Nehemiah proceeds to give the king a list of what he needs. Again, he is just brilliant in what he says. He's so well prepared. He asks for just what he needs to ensure that the rebuilding of Jerusalem quite literally gets a good foundation. First, he asks to be sent to the city. He makes it clear that he's not rebelling or trying to start a new kingdom. He wants to go under the auspices of the king. This shows respect and loyalty, and the king grants his request. Then Nehemiah asks for letters to the governors of Trans-Euphrates in the province where Jerusalem is located. The governors will hear from Artaxerxes himself that the whole undertaking has the king's blessing. Not only will Nehemiah and his companions be granted safe passage by the governors, but the letters from the king will quell any rumors about why Jerusalem is being rebuilt. Nehemiah also asks for a letter to the keeper of the royal park so he can get access to the royal timber. Then Nehemiah lists the three things that he wants to rebuild: the citadel, which will offer protection and be a powerful symbol to any potential invaders; the wall itself, to enclose and protect the city; and his own home in Jerusalem, which shows he's really serious about his request and intends to stay and carry it through. Nehemiah has obviously done his homework. He's done some research to find even such tiny details as the name of the keeper of the royal park. Do you remember that name, Asaph? That's the guy. And this in the days before internet searches were possible. Well, before I became a priest, I was involved in project management, and Nehemiah strikes me as an excellent project manager. He is good at networking. He's good with people. He communicates. He sets priorities well. And he thinks through every single detail before he carries it out. No wonder the king grants his proposal. Nehemiah is set up for success. But before we reason, therefore, that God works first and foremost through the practical way of assessing and living life, we need to look at another side of this story. Tucked into the middle of Nehemiah's request is a little phrase at the end of verse 4. This is back when the king asks Nehemiah what he wants. Before Nehemiah answers the king's question, do you notice what he does? Even with all his thorough preparation, Nehemiah pauses, and it says that he prays to the God of heaven. With this prayer, Nehemiah acknowledges that even his best efforts, as important as they are, will not be what brings success. God is the one who will bring success, and whatever God's definition of success may be. Nehemiah does not consider himself the author of his own story or even that of Jerusalem either. He knows that God is the author of all the stories. If this brief mention of prayer isn't compelling enough for you, check out verse 12. That's just a little beyond what we read today. There, Nehemiah describes his vision and plan like this: what my God had put in my heart to do for Jerusalem. Nehemiah does not dream up his own idea to help Jerusalem. He credits God with it. And then he goes about the practicalities of making it a reality, taking the utmost of care within his power to do so. He is confident because he knows it's God's vision, but he's also humble, realizing he can't do it by himself. In Nehemiah's story, God works by giving vision to Nehemiah. That's more of a supernatural way of working. But God also works in the particularities of Nehemiah's position, skills, and opportunities. As we look at our own rebuilding here at the Res and beyond, we can also see God working both supernaturally and through everyday human ways. Even the application process for our Faith, Our Hope grants was an interesting combination of God's supernatural action and our human participation. We have a vision for our children, our families, our youth, and those who aren't yet part of our community. But where did the vision come from? I think we'd all agree that it came from God, not from us. A new vision for the future keeps coming from God. It's a gift. Many people have prayed for a very long time for this vision, and many continue to pray for it. And as we get into the practicalities and make it a reality, let's not forget to keep on praying. We will still need God's vision for the future. When we applied for our grants, we took that God-given vision and used our God-given but human skills to think hard and hash out what we were really asking for. When the diocesan decision makers received our application, they likewise relied on both God's supernatural work and their human skills. God was working in the people and the diocesan structures as they committed their work to God through prayer to seek his supernatural vision, and then proceeded to use their analytical skills in very human and even business-like ways. The result, when we got our big yes to all the grants, was the assurance of God's hand behind, with, and before us. And equally important, the confidence that our hard work thus far has been examined carefully and approved by people beyond even our community right here. God's work and our work have become so intertwined that it's impossible to untangle all the threads at this point. Prayer, planning, and even policy have come together to make something beautiful with God. As we keep on praying, God is informing our very down-to-earth tasks. One such task is making the space at St. Columba's more welcoming through rearranging rooms, redecorating, and so on. Kind of like our own Res version of the show, Love It or List It. Have you seen that one before? And we want people to love it. More than that, we want people to come to know God's love by being in that space. The same wish, the same prayer goes for our children, our youth, and all of us here at the Res. The ephemeral world of vision and ideas and the earthy world of literal, concrete, and practical tasks are both parts of God's world. Whatever your particular skills, aptitudes, and interests, I'd like to encourage you that God is inviting you too into the work that His Spirit is leading in this place and beyond. Like Nehemiah, let's continually return to God in prayer so that He will renew our vision. And let's do our homework to be well prepared for making the vision reality. Most of all, let's give thanks to God because He has invited us to participate in this work that He is doing, this work that He is leading, and this work that He will give success in whatever definition He determines. Let the adventure continue. Amen.